are listening to the Down the Wormhole podcast, exploring the strange and fascinating relationship between science and religion. This week, our hosts are
Ian Binns, associate professor at UNC Charlotte. My favorite trickster character probably came to mind was Loki from Marvel Universe.
This is Rachel Jackson, rabbi at a Agudas Israel congregation, Hendersonville, North Carolina, and ditto on Loki. I think he is the quintessential trickster.
Zach Jackson, UCC pastor in Reading, Pennsylvania, and my favorite, perhaps the best trickster character in popular culture is Benjamin Linus from Lost.
My name is Adam Pryor. I am a professor at Bethany College in Lindsborg, Kansas, and my favorite trickster character is from Greek myths, Dolos, who is a god of trickery and tries to make a statue of truth in order to make people think they're seeing the real thing, and it's not. And I just think it's brilliant.
I'm Kendra Holtmore, doctoral student at Boston University, and my favorite trickster character is Spike from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I really thought you were going to say the Land Before Time series.
I do love the Land Before Time. I used to have a chomper stuffed animal. Okay.
Adorable.
So today we are going to talk about the Satanic Temple, which is a very exciting topic and one that is interesting because there is so much like misunderstanding or misconception about what the Satanic Temple actually is. But I thought we could just start with a little bit of an overview and talk about some of the famous cases or things that people might recognize them for. And then I'm really curious about everyone's impressions of the Satanic Temple or like your first encounter with that and like what you thought at the time and how that's changed for you over time and what you think is really surprising or interesting about the Satanic Temple. The Satanic Temple was founded in 2013 by two people, Lucien Greaves and Malcolm Jerry. You're more likely to have heard of Lucien Greaves because he is typically the spokesperson for the Satanic Temple. They have physical headquarters in Salem, Massachusetts, and they do not, contrary to what you might think, they do not worship a literal Satan. So if you've never heard of the Satanic Temple, don't really know anything about them, I think the simplest, most straightforward way to describe them is as a political activist organization that really fights for religious liberty. And they also are, for the most part, composed of atheists and secular humanists. And they are very active in trying to protest the courts when they seem to participate in behaviors that indicate a preference for one religion. Mostly, this happens to be Christianity.
It's always Christianity.
Yeah. And so,
let me interrupt real quick, Kendra. Yeah. For those that are unfamiliar with the Satanic Temple, you just described them as secular humanist. If that's the case, why are they calling themselves the Satanic Temple?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because it is also true, in fact, that even though they are political activists, the Satanic Temple does actually have the status of a religion. So they are a tax-exempt organization, and they, if you look on their website, which is, I think, a really nicely organized website, thesatanictemple.com, you will find a lot of things on their website that you would also find on other religious organizations' websites. They have their sort of statement of faith. They have seven tenets. That's the seven tenets of the Satanic Temple. And they have a way to join, have membership to the Satanic Temple. And there are, I think, 13 chapters right now. I could be off on that number. But the whole point of having status as a religious organization is it's tied up with their goal, their political goals. So I think the best way to get this across is maybe just to give an example of something that they've done recently. So in 2015, you may have heard about this giant Baphomet statue. So in 2015, the Satanic temple, they built this Baphomet statue, which is supposed to be symbolic of Satan. And what they did was they took the Baphomet statue to Oklahoma State House, because the Oklahoma State House had a monument of the Ten Commandments. And so they were trying point by going to the State House and asking to put the Baphomet statue alongside the Ten Commandments monument, because their goal is not to impose Satanism on people. What they really want is the flourishing of pluralism. And so they were saying, under the rule of separation of church and state, you either should take down the Ten Commandments monument or allow other religious symbols to be placed alongside these religious monuments that are on government property. And so it's controversial, and they are like trying to rile people up, but they're not trying to like turn everyone into Satanism or like be really like militant about their own beliefs. But it comes across that way because the image of Satan is one that's like inherently controversial for a lot of people. And so the whole goal of the Satanic Temple was to create an organization that has the same structure as what we think of as a religion, while at the same time look like repulsive to people who would typically want Christianity to be the head religion in our country. So they wanted to be repulsive to people that are like conservative evangelicals, but because they have the same structure as a religious organization institution, they can't actually be denied under separation of church and state or under the protections of religious liberty. They can't be denied as a religion, even though they look like Pastafarianism to a lot of people. It's like another sort of ironic political activist group that maintains itself as a religious organization. So yeah, what happened in Oklahoma, though, and this is like part of the goal for the Satanic Temple, was to get the government to respond to their presence. And the Oklahoma Capitol actually took down the Ten Commandments monument. And so that was a success, because the Satanic Temple, they didn't want to put the Baphomet statue up on its own. They only wanted to put it up alongside the Ten Commandments statue or have nothing on the state capitol grounds. And so once they took the Ten Commandments monument down from Oklahoma, then the Satanic Temple was ready to move on to the next location to stir up controversy and get people to realize that we need to be careful and maintain the line between church and state by supporting religious liberty. And so they do this wherever they go, and they protest, and they're very open about the fact that they don't believe in a literal Satan, and that they're for like enlightenment values, secular humanism, things of this sort. Right. So I just want to read a couple of the tenets, because I think it helps get a little bit better of a picture of what the Satanic Temple is actually for. So the very first tenet says, and you can find this on their website, thesatanictemple.com, but the first of their seven fundamental tenets says, one should strive to act with compassion and empathy toward all creatures in accordance with reason. And I think probably would strike a lot of people as surprising, because understandably, the like mainstream image of Satan is one of like evil, and religious traditions that have Satan incorporated into their like worldview. Satan is the foil to God and is trying to like destroy all of humanity, and you know, wants your soul, and it's always like very negative. But that's what's important about this first tenet that says, like, act with compassion and empathy. They're not using that understanding of Satan whenever they host these political protests and are talking to people. Like, they are using the literary figure of Satan as a trickster, as a character that subverts the mainstream, and that is trying to get people to think critically about the routine behaviors that we engage in every day. And so this is the image of Satan that the Satanic Temple is trying to embody. And so it's very different than what you think of when you think of like a traditional religion, like Christianity, in the way that most people talk about Satan in Christianity. It's just like a totally different manifestation than the way Satanic Temple is operating. And another tenet, just because we talked about like Enlightenment values and secular humanism and what does that really mean? But they are, like I said before, they are pro-pluralism and all these things. So one of the tenets that I think reflects this is the fifth tenet. The fifth of seven tenets says beliefs should conform to one's best scientific understanding of the world. One should take care never to distort scientific facts to fit one's beliefs. And so when I say that they're pro-Enlightenment values, I think this tenet sort of captures that they are really not pro-supernaturalism in any way. And that's really important and different from other forms of Satanism that like maybe do believe in magic. For example, the Church of Satan is a totally different organization than the Satanic Temple. And they also would say that they don't believe in a literal Satan, but they do believe in magic. And there's still something that's like, I think I've seen them use the word supernormal, but that might just mean supernatural to some people. And that is something that
was their way of skirting around a word that that carries religious baggage. And
exactly.
Anton LaVey wanted to distance himself from that, but had written that they have these frenzied magical rituals that increase adrenaline in the body enough to impose your will on another person. And that was this kind of magic that the Church of Satan practiced starting in the 60s. They don't really exist very much anymore.
Yeah.
From what I know, other than on Twitter.
Yeah. And I think part of the reason that the Church of Satan is hard to pin down is because, at least from what I understand, they don't actually have a physical headquarters and are not very open about like who is actually part of the Church of Satan. Like they don't like to give those kinds of numbers. So the supernaturalism is not part of the Satanic Temple.
Anton LaVey said that the Church of Satan is basically Ayn Rand with ritual.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
Which sounds disgusting.
Yeah, so I think in some, like the Satanic Temple is controversial then for a couple of like major reasons. One is that, like we've said, the Satanic Temple is often thought of as an organization that believes in a literal Satan, and because they are very political and ironic in their presentation of like some of the protests that they participate in, the religious people that also attend those protests to like be the anti-protesters against the Satanic Temple sometimes feel mocked when they see that the Satanic Temple is trying to support religious liberty and do so with this like figure of Satan. It feels like they are participating in a more supernatural battle. And obviously the Satanic Temple uses that as like part of, like they understand that that's how they're being perceived. And this misunderstanding in some ways is taken by the Satanic Temple as like a political advantage to like make their point. And so it's controversial because some people think they're actual, like literal Satan worshipers. But on the other hand, a lot of people, even religious people, really appreciate what the Satanic Temple is doing because religious people want religious liberty for the most part.
Can I interrupt?
Yeah.
So, you know, is what you just said, I've been kind of thinking this too. You mentioned that, you know, they're not Satan worshipers, you know, and the reason why they came up with their name and stuff like that. And I'm curious, because so full disclosure, I was not really aware at all of this. I had heard of it before, but in all honesty, I just heard the name in the past and honestly thought it was like Satan worshiping. I did not at all realize that's not what it was. And so I'm just curious, have they addressed or is it written anywhere about any negative impacts that's had on their efforts for changes?
I mean, I think that that is a great question and one that I would like us to talk about because obviously there are limits to the persona that they are like embodying, and those limits might be that they are so inflammatory to people that really like have a deeply held belief about Satan and Satan's working in the world that they might not be open to hearing anything about what the Satanic Temple is doing, which is largely political. So I think that that is a risk, but I also think that it's kind of the point for them to some extent. Right. And yeah, I think even like on their website, they have a frequently asked questions section, and they don't spend a lot of time discussing it, but there is a section in that frequently asked questions that has the beliefs of the Satanic Temple. And so people ask things like, do you worship Satan? Do you promote evil? What does Satan mean to the Satanic Temple? And if you look in that section, much of what you'll see is that they're straightforward in saying, no, we don't believe in the existence of Satan or the supernatural.
Right.
When asked, do you promote evil? They say, no. The Satanic Temple holds to the basic premise that undue suffering is bad and that which reduces suffering is good. So there, and they go on to say a little bit more, but I think I'm not totally sure how much these sorts of questions arise in person when they are participating in protests, but it's very straightforward on their website. And again, like, it's not totally clear, like, how many people who believe in Satan, in the literal Satan, would find themselves on the website of the Satanic Temple to
see these clarifications. That I'd like to make the historical point that very few people, if any, well, probably some, I can't say none, but very few have actually worshipped Satan. Because if you buy into the whole Judeo-Christian Satan mythos of the evil bad guy who ends up always losing, why would you choose to worship that? So most people have not. And the church has accused people of Satan worship and of doing the bidding of Satan, and has imagined this vast collection of enemies that all worship the enemy. But in reality, it hasn't really been the case. We've just taken other religious and spiritual ideologies and people, you know, sort of spiritualistic, naturalistic, shamanistic sorts of religious people, and we've called them Satan worshipers because Christians have said if it's not our God, it must be a lie from Satan, and so therefore they are worshiping Satan through their, you know, herbs and oils and potions and whatnot. Not to offend any of my essential oil friends out there, but
I love lavender oil.
You probably would have been burned in the Middle Ages. Diffusers
and for me,
whatnot. But so there was a huge scare in the 80s and 90s around Satan worship, because all these people were coming forward and saying that they had escaped from these Satan cults where people were, there was sexual abuse and there was sacrifice of children and of animals. I remember even where I lived on Halloween and Mischief Night, the night before, you kept all of your animals inside all the time because there were Satan worshipers out there who would steal pets and sacrifice them. And this was a real thing that we believed in the 90s because, well, and it started because of this rise in regressive hypnotic therapy, where you would take somebody who with PTSD or some kind of psychological trauma and put them under hypnosis and then try to uncover the memories that they are hiding. But what ends up happening is, and we've found this to be true today, that's why this doesn't really happen anymore, people tend to invent memories. And then so somebody invents a story about Satan and sacrifice and all of that. It makes it into the news. It makes it into some talk show. It makes it into the public consciousness. And then the next time somebody goes under regressive hypnotic therapy, then their subconscious is imagining this as the backdrop. And so they start imagining. People have been accused. People went to prison. There was just families were ruined because of these accusations of Satan worship and sacrifice. And if all of the claims were true, then there are millions of people who were killed that we have no record of. There was never any evidence for any of this, but it caused this huge stir and this fear of Satan worship throughout the 80s and 90s that was fairly unfounded and due to just bad psychology.
curious about the rest of you. I know, Ian, you said that you didn't really know much about the Satanic Temple until now. And so what was everyone else's encounter? When did you first hear about them? Like, what was your impression and how has that changed? What have you been confused by or intrigued by with regards to the Satanic Temple's like political activism and status as a religious organization?
So I guess my first encounter with them was with the Baphomet statue and the sort of moving the Baphomet statue to various state capitals. And that was the sort of crux of it for me when I first encountered it. And, you know, like a religion professor, got a little interested, kind of dug a little bit to sort of see what's going on with these folks, and then kind of let it go from there. On the one hand, I find them very interesting, particularly in terms of being a political entity. On the other hand, I really struggle with classifying this as religious and whether or not we want to call that religious. And my concern is really to think about does this act as a religion, or do we put this closer to something like the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster? And is this primarily parody or satire? Or maybe burlesque, right? Depending on how we want to describe what's going on and how seriously we want to sort of take the structure of what they're doing. And I think for me, the place where that really emerged was when I started looking at the seven fundamental tenets. And I went, this looks a little bit like what my students might write if I asked them to write out seven things that they believed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it looks a little bit sort of jotted down to me. It doesn't have the heft and weight of what I would hope for out of religious reflection. And it looks a little ad hoc. We did this thing. It was political. Now we need to make sure that we've got our ducks in a row. Here's some tenets for you. And that bothers me a little bit. So I have a sort of like both deep admiration for, because I think satire and parody is immensely important culturally, and a concern to say is, what are your actual goals? And is this the best way to get there?
Reading their website, and I'll be totally frank, I thought the Satanic Temple and the Church of Satan were the same thing until I started researching for this episode. So my perception of them was a little tainted when I saw them on the news, but looking over their tenets and reading some of their documentation, it feels to me like a people without a home. That there's, for people who are non-theistic, who are agnostic or atheistic, that don't believe in a god or any kind of supernatural experience, but want to live scientifically, there's not that community, and there's not that those rituals of transcendence that bring people together, and so there's no unifying language, and we have that in religion, and I think it's kind of baked into us over all of these many tens of thousands of years, and so they're trying to use some of the language of religion to get some of the benefits without the baggage. So to be able to have that unifying language and ritual without having to also pick up a divine being that you can neither see nor hear nor smell. And so I also hesitate to criticize them for a lack of reflection and rigor, because they were just founded, and I get the impression, and I was not around 4,000 years ago, but I get the impression that that's how most religions start. Most religions start with a spiritual experience, a revelation of some kind, and then a founder who's trying to work it out for a while until it gets more steady, and then you get a bunch of intellectuals writing books about it, and then it feels legitimate. But at the beginning, it all feels ad hoc, right?
Well, yeah, but I think that's an important distinction that you're making, Zach, in this idea that many, many religions, I would argue, are starting from some sort of place with a positive experience rather than beginning with parody, is the structure of the sort of like opening salvo. And I think that's that's an important distinction when I, at least in my own experience of what is at stake in the Satanic Temple.
Well, wouldn't it be just such an iconic American religion to start with irony and satire? Is that the American version of Revelation?
Yeah, good point.
So
they just need to have a gift shop, then it's totally American.
They do have a gift shop. There is actually a place where you can get merchandise.
Well, there we go.
Yeah.
God bless America.
So I think we're getting to the question of how would we define a religion? And going back to Kendra's questions, also in response to Adam and Zach, I first came across this group. I think that's an easy term. This group also with the statue at state houses, state courthouses. I think that's when it really got legs. And I thought, well, I get their point, right? It makes a lot of sense that if really the idea is separation of church and state, it's an all or a nothing. Although that does get to be very confusing when if you go for all, that's a very big lawn that you have to put a lot of symbols on. So it becomes... it becomes meaningless in that way. So I see their points. When I read the website and read things about them, they're a really great 501c3. They're a really great non-profit organization with a fantastic mission that I could get behind, right? They're saying, you know, separation of church and state and the secularization of things, and I'm for that. The problem that I have then is how they're doing that. And I want to give the benefit of the doubt and say they're using the system that's in place. And the only way to affect change in the system is to be of the system. So I actually don't look at them as a religion. I look at them as using the system in place, and they have to call themselves a religion in order to get their message across. And in order to actually become a religion, there's certain hoops and paperwork that you have to go with, which is not in parody form, which is what we see with the Pastafarians. So for me, I don't see them as a religion. I see them as signing on the dotted line in the appropriate ways with their fingers behind their back saying, well, maybe not quite. Just recently, John Oliver just did an episode where he was talking about debt collector agencies. And he was saying, you know, anyone can become a debt collector. And he then chose to become a debt collector. And he was like, I don't want this power. I didn't actually want to do this. And he bought the equivalent of $15 million of debt for all of $60,000, because he thought the system is ridiculous and the only way to change the system is to become part of it. And then he just wiped out the debt for those 9,000 people, which was, so he does satire and he does parody, but he also does actionable things, which makes him different than some of the other satire newscasters. So that's how I look at this particular group, is that they might have started that way, but they're trying to actually affect change in our country, doing so in a way that we can understand, which is not the route of the Pastafarians. Although, and I'm thinking about this, right? Both those two groups are new and they started as a parody. If we imagine 200-400 years from now, 800 years from now, and someone finds these websites or someone finds these statues, are they going to believe it was a religion or not? At what point does somebody else looking at it and say, ah, this is religion, when somebody who's not within the group, somebody not in the know, then assigns that moniker to them? I think that's when we'll really know.
I would agree with you, Rachel, in distinguishing between the Satanic Temple and Pastafarianism, because I think in response to Adam's earlier comments, I also see that they use irony in a different way. And where you have the flying spaghetti monster, that's like the deity of Pastafarianism, the Satanic Temple is not, they're not trying to create something that they don't actually believe in. Like they use images that like they say that they don't believe in a literal Satan. And from what I understand of Pastafarianism, like they at least keep up the illusion that they do believe in the flying spaghetti monster by doing all of these things. But the Satanic Temple is using the symbols in a way that forward their political activism. And so it's not the same kind of parody. And so I think that actually makes them way more sincere than I originally thought about them.
Agreed.
And I think their website also seems, it strikes me as a very sincere website. And even beyond the tenets, which are brief. And I think to Adam's point, they do look like they're like jotted down quickly. But I think if you dig a little in some of the other parts of their website, they do discuss like rituals that you can participate in. And they do host services in Salem. And I have never attended any of those things, so I don't know exactly how they play out. But they do have these components that I would think, like, if you really wanted to, you could say that that's a legitimate religion, because even without something like the supernaturalism of other religious beliefs, if we were going by more of a definition of religion that looks more like Durkheim, a sociologist who believes that religion really comes from a community, like a shared sense of morality. You have a moral community, and the rituals and bonds of the people in a community and everything that they share is where you get this like sense of religiosity, or like collective effervescence is a Durkheimian way of talking about the religious feeling. And so I think you can have that in an organization like the Satanic Temple, even though there's also part of me that distinguishes the Satanic Temple as something very different than the way I see Christianity, Judaism, Islam.
So this will probably get me in some trouble, and I'm sorry to my church members who listen to this podcast, but I actually see a lot of parallels between the Satanic Temple and the early church.
Yeah, thank you. Because, I was about to ask that.
I mean, Jesus was, I said it before, he was a rogue rabbi. He didn't follow the rules of the established religion, but he used a lot of the practices and the language of it in order to subvert the system. And his followers kept doing the same thing. And they would, you know, Paul writes a lot that, you know, if you confess that Jesus is Lord, then you'll be saved. And that is a carefully chosen phrase to contrast Caesar is Lord, which is something that was a pledge of allegiance to the Roman Empire. Or even the word gospel is taken from the Roman proclamation of the birth of a new emperor. The Caesar Augustus was called the Son of God. I mean, a lot of the early church's rituals that they were creating, the rites they were creating, the earliest documents that they were jotting down, were intentionally meant to subvert the state religion, the Caesar worship, the Roman religion. It was meant to mimic and mock, in some ways, the religions around them. And later, Christians would do the same thing to Judaism because they wanted to separate themselves and forget the fact that everyone, literally everyone who started the thing was Jewish. But we are a religion of people who co-opt, and we use other people's language in some ways to parody, in some ways to create something new, to take the things that are good out of it and to use them for our own value. We are like the Borg of a religion. You know, and I say that not as a criticism. I say that this is the reason why we have been so, I hate to use the word successful, but so we've had such staying power, is we are flexible in our ability to use the imagery and the rituals around us to both critique the establishment and also to find collective meaning together. I think the thing that distinguishes the early church from the Satanic Temple is that the early church believed in a God and the Satanic Temple does not. And so But aside from that, I see a lot of similarities.
Okay, but here's where I worry, right? We can trace out the similarities, and I'm okay with that. And if we want to use a sociological definition of religion, then yes, we can start to sort of look at where these places go. But for instance, right, if we turn to somebody like Mircea Eliade instead of Durkheim as the way in which we wanted to analyze what's going on with something like the Satanic Temple, right, we might offer a really different conception of whether or not this is religion, right? Because we'd have a different criteria by which we want to engage it. So does the Satanic Temple facilitate an encounter with the holy or the numinous? Right?
Would you like, Adam, to maybe elaborate a little bit more for people?
Yeah. Sorry. I sort of like jumped right on that.
I love saying that name, by the way.
Because it's a great point, but yeah.
No, right? So part of what I'm saying, right, is like when we're sort of following Kendra, or we're following Zach here, right? We're using a sociological definition of religion, and that's not the only ball game in town, right? So if we use a different sort of starting point by which we're defining that religion, right? A guy like Mircea Eliade, who's a professor at the University of Chicago, is going to be much closer sort of in heritage and religious studies to somebody like Tyler and Fraser, if we want to go way back, but is very concerned with the notion of the holy, right? And how the holy functions in religion and makes religion a phenomena, something in the world that's distinct from sociology or anthropology in terms of a course of study. So when I do something like that, right, this question that I think Zach is sort of pressing at, right? Like if I really just want to point out to the difference, the early Christians had this very distinct notion of a God and the Satanic Temple doesn't. That's a big difference. It's not just a difference, right? Because that idea of God is coding for something holy, right? And I'm using the word numinous here, right, is this experience of something that's otherwise not categorizable, that's implicit and inherent to the way in which satire then proceeds, or the ways in which other traditions are sort of mined for symbols and cultural experiences, right? But there's that piece that becomes crucial to it. And what I wonder about something like the Satanic Temple, right, is does parody at the very bottom provide enough of an experience that we would call it religion if we use a definition of like an experience of the holy as a sort of foundational piece of how we're categorizing that? Or do they just become a really good 501c3, kind of like Rachel said?
But let me ask you this, Adam, when we're volleying back and forth these definitions, how would we understand a religion without a theistic foundation, right? So how do we look at a humanistic religion? Or a secularistic religion? So for example, in this area and in many other areas, there are secular humanist Jews. And it's a whole thing where they have a lot of the cultural elements, a lot of the ritual elements, and none of the theological elements. So for all of our prayers where we invoke the image and name and holiness of God, right? Blessed are you, Adonai. They just don't use that phrasing. So they are then a religion, right? Or, and not just Jewish humanists, but other humanists, or ways of identifying, say, nature as holy, or relationships as holy. How do we then say, well, that fits, and this one, the Satanic Temple, doesn't meet the mark? Who are we to judge that?
We're scholars. No.
There you go.
That's who we are. No,
we're people with a microphone.
That's right. Now you have to listen.
We
to
have
it.
A platform.
No, but I think that's the exact right question to ask. Right. The place where that line gets drawn, it gets real squishy and really uncomfortable, yeah, and really gray. I'm absolutely on board with that. But, right, here's my big but. Intuitively, which
really?
Is not a good criteria, I don't find those are similar. I do think there is actually a distinction to be made there in terms of how the holy gets encountered or named in those sorts of experiences that you were laying out. And let me be clear, right? Like when I use holy, I certainly don't mean like a particular metaphysics or that it has to be theistic or something like that. But I agree, right? Like this is really uncomfortable territory because suddenly folks maybe who we thought we would name religious when we try to line up a nice, neat definition like this don't become religious. And that is really uncomfortable. And that is why I get up and come to work every morning just to make people feel that discomfort that keeps me up at night.
Well, so a group of secular humanists who find collective meaning through their scientific meta story and that have a set of rituals that brings collective meaning to their lives, that engender a sense of awe and wonder and purpose to their existence, but that deny the existence of any supernatural being. How is that any different than, say, Buddhism?
I want Adam to answer this question.
Adam usually is the one that asks the questions.
I've been waiting. Waiting to bring up Buddhism, so I.
I think I'm going to leave that entire pause in there and not edit any of that out.
I wouldn't. So keep
everyone
it all.
Knows
keep it all.
How uncomfortable that was.
Just straight up dead air.
I think that's a really important point, though, that there are like all kinds of non-theistic ways to be religious, even within traditionally theistic religions, and. So it's not, I don't see that as a qualifier of like what it means to be religious. I understand why that would be the case. And I don't think that that's like all you're saying, Adam, but.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I agree. Right. And I would want to say like there are, for me, and again, here I'm going to go personally, there are plenty of examples of non-theistic religions. Buddhism, absolutely, for me, is a rich tradition with a deep sense of how one. I'm just going to keep going back to Mircea Eliade in this case because I already went down that path, and I might as well stick with it, right? There is a deep sense of the sacred in the ways in which this religious set of practices are honed in order to encounter something that is not otherwise describable in the panoply of ways in which the university might engage with that group of people. And this is where, so maybe here's where I would backpedal a little bit, right? While I don't find that the Satanic Temple is something that I would want to describe as religious, I would certainly not want to say that means it's not religious. There are definitely folks for whom there may be an encounter of the sacred there. And I think it's incumbent upon me to try and understand that better and to take that encounter with the sacred that they experience, but I don't, to take it very seriously. I mean, I hope that's sort of like something that we would all sort of agree with in terms of the fact that we seem pretty vested in doing things like interfaith dialogue, right? So by no means do I want to sort of make a normative claim to say like, it's not religious, we can choose to ignore it, right? Like to me, they're a great example of a phenomenon that I have to look at even more closely because I can't sort of intuit my way into an experience of this as a religion.
Mm. I have a question for you, Adam. Because
man, geez, you guys are.
This is you making up for missing 2 weeks.
Quietly,
yeah, you've missed a lot lately.
Yeah, we need to
gotta get it all in now.
Yeah, well, because you've mentioned Eliade a couple of times, and so just to give a little bit of context, Eliade has this idea of a hierophany, which is you could say the foundation of religion, and a hierophany is just a term to describe a manifestation of the sacred. And so this will happen. Like if something is a religion, then there are, of course, bound to be hierophanies. And my understanding of this idea is that hierophanies often come from like the great mythologies of the world and the ways in which those get embedded in religious traditions and the way people experience those through various rituals and beliefs. And so I just wonder if even though we can talk about how the Satanic Temple uses irony. I don't think, like I said before, I don't think that they are a totally like ironic organization, but it seems like you could describe their use of even like the literary figure of Satan and these values of pluralism and maybe tolerance, whatever, enlightenment values, like the way that they experience their values is connected to this like mythology of the figure of Satan, even though it looks different than the way that a religion like Christianity would talk about Satan. It still feels appropriate to me to describe that in this like mythological sense. And so I don't know if you, like how you would respond to that reading of a hierophany, but I think that it's also something that's different. I think that the concern for defining religion looks a lot different for scholars than it does for people who are concerned with the law. So like a legal definition of religion has to be different than the scholar or the religious adherence definition of religion because their concerns are different. So I also would add that.
I think that's a really critical piece, right? Like I'm like entering in this as like a scholar of religion and in particular as a theologian within a specific tradition, right? So that's affecting how I would do this. And I think there's an interesting question we shouldn't let go there about if we're doing this from a political vantage point in terms of church and state versus a sort of religious studies standpoint for scholars, right? I think you're right. There probably are very different stakes in that game that are worth pulling apart. But I think you're reading, one, I like your reading of Eliade's Hierophany. That's kind of how I would do it too. So I think the piece that I didn't know about the Satanic Temple before I started sort of getting ready for this episode was the way in which they're appealing to Satan as a literary figure across different traditions. And that does complicate how one perceives what they're doing. And this is the place where I would implore my more like straight up religious studies colleagues to say like some really good observation and first person observation of what's going on with the Satanic Temple would be really helpful. And I think it'd be a really interesting case for sort of clarifying how religion is defined in this really dense space between the academy and the public, which is maybe not like our focus here, but I think there's something really interesting there. Cause I don't think I could totally buy your reading, Kendra, like that is a way of understanding what's going on with the Satanic Temple. And maybe it says something more about my deep distrust of all other human beings that I just assume that this is sort of ad hoc parody that's going on. Right. I am a good Lutheran Protestant. All people are sort of terrible. But I think that's fair, right? Like that's how those sorts of pieces are influencing the way in which we want to give or not give credibility to the claims they're making is really important.
So taking it out of the satire and the political theater of it all, I feel this need around me from all of these people who have left church, which I'll tell you, as a pastor, is a lot of people. We have a lot of open seats on Sunday mornings. And so there's this ever-expanding group of people who are decidedly non-religious and in many cases just don't believe at all. But they're missing that. We've been practicing religion as a community practice for tens of thousands of years, probably. I mean, at least since the agricultural revolution, we start to see idols and usually fertility goddesses and whatnot. It seems that very early on, people are uniting around something. And that is a way that people of disparate groups can be united. You know, when I meet another Christian. We already have something in common. We already have a tribe that is bigger than just the tribe that's here. And that's, as more people leave religion, they're leaving extended families and they're finding themselves without that connection anymore and are desiring something else. And what that is and what that will look like in a secular society is still kind of being worked out in practice. I think people are experimenting with forms of non-religious religion as a way of taking some of the value without the baggage. And will the Satanic Temple turn into a huge religion? Probably not, because it's based on satire, but I think it's exposing a deep yearning in our society for that connection that religion gives us. And so I think that we will look back on this time and we'll say, oh, this was the beginning of this new secular religion, of whatever word we'll use in the future.
Well, that was one thing, the impression I got while reading it, looking over the website earlier this morning and preparing for today, that I felt like, you know, a lot of things I've read over the past year, and I've known this for a while, but a lot of things I've read from different religious scholars and just different areas of research about the importance of community and how the human species, how important community is to our species. And so, you know, and how religion in many situations provides that community aspect that many people are seeking. And so when I was reading just through like the tenets and just through their website, I just kept getting that feeling over and over again that this was almost like, I'm not saying this is their sole purpose, but that it was an attempt to establish a community for like-minded people, that you could still get that feeling that you may have gotten if you were at one point identified as a religious individual and you left that, you know, notion of organized religion, but you still wanted the community aspect. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like I felt like that's kind of where, that's just and part of what it is I got out of it, was that it seemed like a potentially a good attempt to establish community.
So we are at time. So Kendra, do you have any final words, final thoughts to take us out on?
I mean, nothing inspirational, but I guess I would, I just would add, I think that what Ian said, and Zach, I think you said earlier that the Satanic Temple strikes you as a lost people. I think in our conversation, it's important to remember that the Satanic Temple, similar to the origins of many religious traditions, they're responding to something. And the reaction of the Satanic Temple is an attempt to address concerns about religious liberty and the separation between church and state. And so I think it's important to keep that in mind, as much as we might explore like what they believe about supernaturalism or like what constitutes a religion and how did they fit into that definition. I think the bottom line is to remember the political goals that they have, because that I think is, I mean, I'm not a member of the Satanic Temple, but I think that that's what they would say that they are most concerned with, more than the status of being a religion. They care about furthering their political goals.
It's only $25 for a membership card. I think we should get you one, Kendra.
Ooh.
Well, can't say I'd be flashing that around.
Yeah. The UCC is pretty liberal, but I think they would frown on that if I...
This has been episode 14 of the Down the Wormhole podcast. If you like what you hear, make sure to share these episodes on social media or just with your friends. Podcasts spread best by word of mouth. Check out downthewormhole.com for contact information, social media, and copious show notes. Next week, we are beginning our series on evolution and why we care so deeply about it. And once again, don't forget, applications for the next round of the Sinai and Synapses Fellowship are due December 4th. You can learn more about the program at sinaiandsynapses.org. Trust me when I say that you will not regret it. But why should you trust us? Well, because...
we're people with a microphone.